We get the hour started by welcoming into the program an actress that you've seen in films like Once Were Warriors, Star Wars, Attack of the Clones, AI, television shows like The Orville, and for the last three seasons on the critically acclaimed Freeform series, Siren. We are pleased to be joined this afternoon by Rena Owen. Rena, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me this afternoon.
Well, you just wrapped the third season of Siren, which has become a huge success, and it's that rare show that the audience loves, but the critics love it too, like a 94% thumbs up on Rotten Tomatoes. What is it about this show that's made it so successful?
I think right back to the original script, the pilot, was the concept of a world that was totally original, totally unique, and had a marketplace. I mean, essentially, the show is a show about what happens when a real-life mermaid comes to land. And so, it has the formula of well-known TV shows like Grimm, or something very similar to the show, but it's a whole new topic, and it's very organic, and it's very authentic, and the characters are very identifiable in this small coastal community. So there's a little something for everybody. It kind of crosses a lot of boxes, too, in terms of like your kind of everyday little town community kind of drama. And then you've got the horror elements going on with top-level predators, mermaids. And I think, as I learned in my research, there's an enormous appetite in the world, an enormous following of, they even have comic conventions for mermaids and mermen. I think the next topic may be unicorns, which we're yet to see in TV series. But the thing that made our show different is, unlike the mermaids we all grew up with, which were very beautiful and enticing and intoxicating, our mermaids are like that, but they're also top level predators, and they will bite the head off a shark. And that's what gives our show the edge, is the fact that they are dangerous.
Well, absolutely. And your character, Helen Hawkins, has, well, let's just say, an interesting family history.
She certainly does. In brief, the town is, the pioneer, the ancestor of Bristol Cove is Ted Powell's great-great-grandfather, and the story was that he fell in love with a mermaid and had a child, which was a hybrid, and from that would have been Helen's great-grandmother, and then her mother came from that, and then Helen. So my character's actually 1/8 mermaid. So I'm a hybrid, and for most of probably Helen's life, she's always thought she was the only one, and she's been like in the closet with the secret, until the real mermaids and merpeople start coming to land, and then she suddenly becomes a sanctuary and a safe haven for them, and she has all the history and is able to help them and facilitate them. And, of course, Ted Powell, played by the wonderful David Cubitt, he's pretty much like the mayor of Bristol Cove. So we come from that same ancestor, the founder of our town. But he grew up thinking that his great-great-grandfather had a child with a prostitute. So it's only been in this last season, season three, that he's come to find out the truth, that mermaids and mermen are real, and that his great-great-grandfather fathered a mer-child. Because his son is the leading guy, the leading character, Ben, has gotten very romantically involved with our leading mermaid. So you had that going on there for a while, to a thruple, something that was very different. And then you've got someone like me who kind of satisfies the ones in the mature category who want something with a little bit more weight and a little bit more drama. And then, of course, you've got, it's a young adult platform, Freeform. So it's first and foremost for young adults. And It has ticked a lot of boxes, and to date it has been Freeform's most successful show in terms of how many people watch it and in terms of international sales. So right now we're waiting to find out if it will be renewed for season four.
Well, I sure hope so, because it's so wonderfully done. And a tip of the cap to Eric Wald and Dean White for creating such a thoroughly thought-out universe. There are so many great characters, the depth, the backstory of everybody. They've done their work and made it a fascinating world to watch.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to add the name into that mix that has made all the difference is our showrunner, Emily Whitesell. So she has been our showrunner since the pilot. She also is a fellow writer, so often her and Eric write scripts together. And they're so on the pulse. I mean, there's a lot of social commentary goes on in our stories without it being on soapboxes or without it being in your face or without it being on the nose. It's a bit like what Seth MacFarlane does with the Orville. You know, that's the kind of fantasy Star Trek world, but there's a lot of social commentary underneath the facade of his show. And when we think about the pilot of Siren, what brought our first mermaid to land is a very real environmental issue around the world where seabeds are being stripped through mostly greed. It's happening in New Zealand, it's happening everywhere. Seabeds are being stripped of food by commercial trawlers and all the rest, which means these deep-sea predators have having to come closer to the surface to find food. And the sister, Lynn's sister Donna, gets caught up in a net and captured by the military, who literally study her. But that's what brings our leading character, who's just the phenomenal Eileen Powell, brought her character to land to find her sister. And so this environmental issue has remained part of the storyline because our other two leads are environmentalists. They're marine biologists. A new character came into play in third season, and he's on this big kind of global journey to clean up the plastic out of our oceans. So, you know, I love that. I think clever television and clever film is able to do a bit of both, give you a little bit of fantasy, give you a little bit of escapism, but also give you a little bit, food for thought.
Absolutely. We're talking
a little bit of food for thought in the mix there.
We're talking with Rena Owen on Downtown. Well, the film that first brought you to people's attention all around the world was Once Were Warriors, and could you have imagined, did you have any sense when you were making this film that your role as Beth would be something that people would still be talking about and raving about more than 25 years later?
I had a strong, not necessarily that, but I had a strong sense that it had the potential to do well. And I remember saying to our director, this is a really important film. Because it was based on a novel, and I remember reading the novel, and I could not put it down. And at the end of that book, I remember thinking, God, whoever wrote this lived this life, because it was so authentic and organic. And I also thought, if this book is ever made into a film, that is a role to die for. And 3-4 years later, we made the movie. But I thought it had a lot of potential because it dared to deal with subject matters, issues that we all knew went on in our communities, but nobody talked about things like sexual abuse or domestic violence or alcoholism in the family. And these, of course, they're topics now. I mean, God, you just look at the Me Too movement. In fact, I remember a few people on social media said, oh, Beth, you know, from Once Were Warriors was the original Me Too a character, but back in those days, you know, people weren't really ready for it. And so it kind of got a bit swept under the carpet to a certain degree. And I remember here in America being on a press junket, and they were kind of saying no to inquiries from community groups. And I said, why are you saying no? This is your audience. And they said, well, we don't want to market this as a film about domestic violence. And I said, but that's what it is. Domestic violence. And I said, you've got the perfect P&A campaign, which you don't even have to pay for. America was in the middle of the O.J. Simpson case, which was all about domestic violence and ultimately death. And the reply to that I got was, well, you know, everybody's kind of sick of the O.J. Simpson case. Everybody's over it. No, they weren't. They sat glued to their television for another 3 months. So, you know, had there been a bit more boldness, but I also respect that you get these things that are new and they're a bit too close to home and they're a bit like you're not sure how to. But anyway, they marketed it as a film about gangs, which is not a good idea in America because America makes the best gangster movies. So it was a missed opportunity. I mean, if they'd gone big and bold and kind of said, hey, we've got a film out there just like what been seen on TV right now with the O.J. Simpson case, we've got this movie. It may have been very different, but, you know, let's remember this. It was 25 years ago, and of course now we're talking about things that just weren't even spoken about 25 years ago. But that film, to this day, I still get more attention for that rather than the two Star Wars I did. That film also, to independent filmmakers out there, or filmmakers, or actors, or writers, that movie was made on $1.2 million American dollars in 34 days, and it made Time Magazine's top 10 list of the best movies in the world. And I'm going to say this, it always comes down to strength of story. If you've got a strong story and that is, it feels original and it feels organic and authentic, it's like Siren. Those ingredients always work, you know, when it taps into aspects of humanity. And I think, you know, really relevant things come up in these past 3 to 4 months while we've been on lockdown, because often in smaller countries, including my own, New Zealand, you know, the arts are often seen as a luxury. And they're often, you know, budgets get cut for artistic things. But if you look at the season of COVID-19 and our lockdown, what did everybody turn to? They turned to the arts. They turned to television. They watched films. They pulled out their old music. They pulled novels off their bookcases. They started reading. And I just don't, I can't imagine what we would have done as a civilization if we didn't have the arts to turn to in this 4 months of lockdown.
By the way, you mentioned your home country of New Zealand. You're a second guest from New Zealand. We talked with the wonderful Melanie Linsky about a year ago. And my goodness, when you send people here from New Zealand to America, you're sending us some awfully talented folks, yourself included.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Melanie. I've known Melanie since she was a teenager, and she got launched. Her and Kate Winslet got launched at the same time. And Peter Jackson's first successful film, Heavenly Creatures, which was based on a real-life story where these two teenage girls killed a mother. And Peter had done a couple of movies before then, horror, gore kind of movies. But Heavenly Creatures was the one that got critical acclaim. And it was a similar time as Once the Warriors. So we all traveled the world pretty much together, and would pop up at the same film festivals or the same places like in Venice or in Germany. And Heavenly Creatures also made Time Magazine's top 10 list that year. So for our little country of less than 5 million people, yes, we had two movies on that top 10 list, 1994, of Time Magazine. And for a small population, we do well. I mean, we're a typical parochial small town suburbia place, like what happens with small communities and small populations, but we're incredibly advanced in a lot of other ways. I mean, even if you look at, say, women's issues, we were the first woman in the world to get the vote. We have not had one female president, well, we call them prime ministers, like Canada. We've had three.
Well, yes, and we're incredibly jealous of the one you have now who has done such a great job of handling the virus.
She has. It's been exceptional leadership, and they just took responsibility, and they locked it down very quickly. And also, too, places like New Zealand, like Hawaii, like Iceland, small islands have a better chance of it because they can lock the borders. It's small population, so you can do contact tracing. Maybe things would have been different here with different leadership, but that's another whole topic. And, you know, we're seeing the consequences now. with numbers going up. And I just, because I'm past 50, I'm very diligent. You know, I turn down group gatherings because I just don't want to put myself at risk. I still wear a mask. I wear gloves. I go out and I have my daily walks and I pick up my groceries. But I just don't want to get sick, you know. And so I just don't want to think I'm untouchable or arrogant that it's never going to, because it can happen to anybody. And what they're finding now is it's more and more in their 20s and their 30s.
Right.
Testing positive. So I love life and I'd like to live a long life. And, you know, once you pass 50, the saying's true, every day above ground is a good day. So I'm not going to mess with it. Yeah, I'm not going to push my luck. I'm not going to mess with it. I'm actually heading back to New Zealand next month to do a movie, to do another independent movie, which is going to be quite a very important and special film for our country because it's based on a trailblazing, iconic legend, a woman called Dame Fina Cooper, who led the land marches in the 70s to try and fight for land, land back to the indigenous people. So it's one of those kind of roles, and there's going to be three actresses, one for pre-20, one for 20 to 50, and then I'll pick up 50 to 80. But those scenes in her 80s and her 70s are scenes that are kind of the best-known moments of her kind of legacy. So New Zealand's gone back into production. I mean, James Cameron and all his crew are back down there. They're back shooting, you know, Avatar. Production's back up and running. I'm not sure if Amazon's back up and running with Lord of the Rings, but because they've been able to contain the virus with very strict disciplines and doctrines in place, I mean, right now they're panicking a little bit because they've had two people who've tested positive, and it's coming from people who are coming in from overseas.
Right.
So when I arrive, I'm going to have to do 2 weeks in quarantine. And that's just the way it is before I can go into rehearsals and production. And then I'm really hoping that I get to come back and go back to Vancouver to do season four. I think the challenge for a lot of studios who've all had to push shows or cancel shows, or the majority have pushed their shows to 2021. So now it's a logistical, it's a matter of logistics of how on earth do you figure out how to shoot all your different shows with studios that are closed or borders that are closed. Canada's border is still closed. But I like to think that we'll go to season four, and it may not happen until next year, but I'd really miss it, you know, because it's a great world we've created, like you said, and it's a remarkable world, and we're just so blessed by such clever writers. They're so ahead of their time. They really are. They've written, we've done episodes that have literally then gone on to play out in life. I mean, we were issued, there was one episode at the end of season two where we all got on under martial law and locked up. It's just uncanny. And then we have stunning directors and we have an amazing crew, and we're very close as a cast and crew now that we've done three seasons, and we all enjoy our show. And I love Helen. I love playing Helen. She's a gift of a character, and I would really miss her, and I'd miss our cast and crew if it got cancelled. So fingers crossed we renew. I'd also like to put it out there that I'd love to have another shot at another Star Wars, and another one of my fellow countrymen that's done extraordinarily well, of course, it's been Taika Waititi.
Yes, indeed. I loved JoJo. Yeah. Was such an amazing movie.
Oh, yeah, and of course, he made his mark. He'd done a few independents that did really well globally, and that's what kind of opened the door for him here in Hollywood. And the one he really first and foremost went off with was Thor, Ragnarok.
Right.
It was a huge success for him, which then meant he could pretty much do anything. And he's now, he's doing a couple, he's attached to a lot of things, but one of these things is to co-write and direct another Star Wars. So, I'd love a shot.
Well, we would be remiss, too, if we failed to mention that you're part of one of the most exclusive clubs in cinematic history. Was it only six actors who can say what you can say?
I know. I had no idea about that fact until I was actually at a Comic-Con convention, and a fan told me many years ago, and at that point it was only five. He said, "You know, you're only among five other actors in the world." And I said, "No, I had no idea." And now it's six, but I'm still the only actress.
That's right.
Worked with Lucas and Spielberg. So yeah, not bad for a little girl from the sixth of New Zealand who grew up milking cows. All things are possible, eh?
Absolutely. Well, we wish you continued success and good health. Have a wonderful time in New Zealand, and like you, we'll keep our fingers crossed for a fourth season of the wonderful series, Siren. Rena, it's been a delight to talk with you. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Oh, you too. Thank you for having me, and hopefully we'll do it again in the future with more juicy stuff to talk about.
That'll be wonderful.
Thank you, and stay safe and stay well.
Thank you. Rena Owen with us on Downtown.